One of the things you learn over time as you read the Bible, and I learned it a long time ago and I keep having to relearn it, is that sometimes it's easy to read things and think you know what it says, and it says something much more. Or maybe another way to think about it is sometimes we read it and we get the idea and it's like there is a truth to that, but there's sometimes something much deeper going on, something else that's being said. In our passage from today, there's a line, this man named Paul, he says this, and we'll come back in a minute to it. He says, "For I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and him crucified." I think for a long time I read that passage, that line from Paul, and I thought, what he's talking about is all he ever talked about was that Jesus died for our sins. That was his message, that's what he wanted to do, was just talk about Jesus Christ and him crucified. Because that's what it sounds like he's saying. But if you read the rest of what Paul writes, he talks about a whole lot of stuff that's about something other than Jesus' death on a cross. But he's got whole letters where he doesn't necessarily mention that specific thing. But in a way, he also does talk about it. And that's what we're going to look at today in this passage, is how Paul is talking about Jesus' death on a cross, but maybe not simply about that specific event. And maybe not specifically about how Jesus died for our forgiveness, but he's saying something much more when he says, my message is centered on Jesus Christ and him crucified. So let's back up just a little bit. So we're in a series on the letter to the Corinthians. And so there was a man named Paul. Paul was a Jewish religious leader, a teacher of the religious laws of Judaism. And he initially heard about Jesus, and he was opposed to this message of Jesus. In fact, he was persecuting this early church, these early followers of Jesus. And then he had a miraculous encounter with Jesus, and it turned his life around, and he became an apostle. In other words, someone who went out, someone who was sent to teach about Jesus. And so he traveled all around the Mediterranean. He went by ship, he went by land, and he went to various places and told people about who Jesus was and how Jesus was God's rescuer, the Messiah, the Lord, the one who God had sent to rescue people and to rescue the world. He did it by traveling to places and going and teaching, but oftentimes he also did it by sometimes sending letters because he couldn't be everywhere at once. And so these letters, we have many of those in what we call our New Testament. One of those is the letter to the Corinthians, or what's called 1 Corinthians, because we have two different letters to this church in Corinth. Corinth was a city that sits in what we call modern-day Greece and kind of the major isthmus. It was a major economic crossroads. It was a place of power. It was a place of prestige. And so he's writing to this church there, and he's talking to them, and one of the things that they're dealing with is issues of pride and divisions. And what's happened is they've forgotten the way of Jesus. Paul had come to them at some previous point and told them about Jesus and what it looks like to follow Jesus. But at some point along the way, as they kind of got into their rhythms and routines, they forgot that basic message. And so Paul had written to them and was saying, I need to remind you of what I told you before. I need to remind you of the basics. And one of the ways they had done that, and it's a little earlier in chapter, what we call chapter one, is they were kind of fighting over leaders. And so there's a section where it says, he says, well, one of you, my brothers and sisters, he says, I follow Paul. Another says, I follow Apollos. Another says, I follow Cephas. Still another, I follow Christ. And so they're going back and forth, apparently, in this church, these small group of individuals, maybe 50 to 100 in the city of Corinth, and they're kind of fighting over who they follow. Who's the leader that we're behind? And maybe there's a sense of like, which one's the better one? Or which one's the more cool one? You know, which leader do I want to be identified with? Well, I'm a part of that. He's my teacher. Not unlike we do sometimes in the modern world where we attach ourselves to a follower leader. And maybe it's a big Christian teacher and you're like, oh, well, he's the guy I listen to. You know, I listen to John Piper. Or I listen to Charles Stanley. You know, and sometimes it drifts over. Not that it's bad to listen to other people, but sometimes it drifts into like you becoming that's who you attach yourself to. That's the identity. And that's what was going on here in this church was they were doing that. And some of it was a sense of trying to puff themselves up, to stand over other. And what Paul reminds them of is Jesus is their only source of life. He's their identity. And he goes on, he says about himself, he says, "For Christ did not send me to baptize, but to preach the gospel, not with wisdom and elegance, lest the cross of Christ be emptied of its power." And so I want to pay attention to two words there, wisdom and power. Because those were important words. Those are words that we use in a lot of different ways. And they probably used there in the church in Corinth. But maybe they don't mean what we think they mean. Maybe they mean something else. And so what's Paul doing? He's wanting to reshape their imagination. Make them think differently about things. So even the word power. We use the word power in lots of different ways. And sometimes when I'm preparing a message, I sit there and my mind kind of wanders. I get a word and then I just kind of follow down a rabbit trail of different images or pictures that come to your mind. Has that ever happened to you? Where you hear a word and all of a sudden just all these different things come into mind. So you say the word power and all of a sudden I've got 5-6 different stories or, and oftentimes it's some sort of bizarre cultural reference that comes to mind. So for example, some of the ones that came to mind when I thought of power was a television show that I watched when I was growing up called Home Improvement. And Home Improvement was about this man named Tim Taylor, and he had this a television show which was about a television show, and on the television show about a television show, on this television show that was on the television show called Tool Time, he played Tim the Tool Man, and he was all about power. And he was all about why he'd always take, you know, he'd take a lawnmower and he'd slap a big block engine on it and try and rev it up, or a shower that would tear your skin off. And there were all these things. His one of his big phrases was more power. Or Star Wars, one of my other favorite things, where Palpatine, unlimited power. And so he's this idea of power, or the rings of power, all these different ways of looking at what power looks like. Or we simply think about power, studying engineering. Power is this application of force to make something happen. When we buy a tool or we want a car, we want something that's got power and there's this energy. But power can mean different things. And so we have those ways, or we think of the word wisdom. Wisdom is one of those words that I think about doesn't show up much outside of church. I mean, generally, if you were to travel around and just have conversation, read books, not a lot of people would be talking about wisdom. But maybe a better way to think of it is, what's the smart thing to do? What's the right way to do things? And the church is all about wisdom, but maybe not in the right way. I've been in full-time ministry, vocational ministry since 1998, and I've been to all kinds of conferences and read books and workshops and attended things in person, online. And so many of them are about the best practices, the right way to do things. Here's the way to grow your church. Here's the way to build a children's ministry. Here's the way to reach out to your guests. And we call it sometimes wisdom. And we set up these ways of doing it. But I think when we read Paul, he wants to tell us something different. He wants to reshape the way we think about things. So he says in verse 18, "For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to those who are being saved, it is the power of God." In other words, the word of the cross, the message of the cross as God's power and wisdom. And this is, if you read the letter to the Corinthians, this is in some sense, this little passage here from about that Jim read earlier, is kind of the theme, central message of this letter to the Corinthians. And we're going to come back to this theme again and again. About the message of the cross and how it's foolishness and how it's the power of God. And this is why even the title of the series, A Cross-Shaped Life, because it's about looking like Jesus. So by the cross, where he says this, he says, for the message of the cross, he's talking about Jesus, his death on the cross. But he's also talking about the shape of his life that led him there. And we're not ignoring the resurrection. The resurrection is absolutely critical. In fact, there's no good news without a resurrection. To say Jesus is Lord is to say the crucified but resurrected in Jesus. So Jesus is Lord and Messiah. So to talk about the cross is a way of pointing to the shape of the life of Jesus. In other words, the cross is where Jesus reveals himself and what he is like. One theologian put it this way. He said, the cross is the signature of the one who is risen. And so it's a way of saying, when we say the cross is foolishness, he's talking about the life, what Jesus looks like, and then his death on the cross and all that goes along with it. This announcement of who God is and what he's done. So we think of it this way, and in verse 24, we're going to come in. He says, but to those whom God has called both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. So he's kind of equated Christ, Jesus, and the cross all together. It's the wisdom and the power of God. So what's he talking about? We want to think about it in three ways. Three things we want to think about. Is the first is what he said is the cross of Jesus doesn't look like power and wisdom from the outside. But to those who saved, it does. That's the first thing we want to think about. Second thing is, what does it tell us about God? And third is, what might it be inviting us into? So it doesn't look like power and wisdom from the outside. It tells us something about God and it invites us into a life. So we'll go back to this. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles. But to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. So he's saying, foolishness and a stumbling block, that's our message. But to those who are being saved, in other words, those who are on the inside, it makes sense. It's power and wisdom. In other words, what he's saying, if you don't believe, it's foolishness. So he says it in this way. And part of what he's saying is, all the wisdom in the world can't truly reveal God. All the wisdom in the world can't truly reveal God. And that's kind of where he's gone with this thing about all the wisdom and all these wise teachers. You can go all kinds of places and hear all sorts of things, but you can't truly know God except through Jesus. The second thing is, he says, it's foolishness and a stumbling block because we can't wrap our head around the idea of a crucified Savior. It doesn't make sense to the world. So think about it. What does conventional power and wisdom look like? What does it look like when we talk about someone having power, or maybe the church or having Christianity gaining power? It's often framed, we think of power over. It's about dominion. But the cross doesn't look like that. The cross of Jesus does not look like power over people. If you were to travel back to that, because this is one of the challenges for us in 2026, is the cross has become, it's a piece of jewelry people wear. It's a bumper sticker on their cars. It's something we put on stained glass windows. We decorate things with it. Maybe we get a tattoo of it. But for the ancient world, for these early followers of Jesus, the cross was social stigma. It was something vulgar. In fact, many say that as they read some of the letters written by Romans, that cultured Roman citizens wouldn't even mention the idea of the cross in a conversation. Because it was such a, because what the cross was, it was a means of execution. And more than that, it was a way to shame. It was a way to demonstrate power. When the Empire of Rome hung someone on a cross, it was a way to say, we have power and you don't. And they were crucified in public. Today in our modern world, oftentimes we have execution. There might be a few things. But this was literally, this was out on the street so that people could see it. And one of the things I've learned over time, too, is when people were crucified, and we have the image a lot of our songs, like on a hill far away and up, the truth is most crucifixions really took place where the people being crucified were hung not much higher than eye level. So in other words, what Rome did was they put someone on a cross, usually naked, stripped, beaten, hanging on the cross, dying in agony and pain, and they put them on the streets walking into the city. So if you wanted to enter in the city, what you had to do was walk by one of these people being crucified. And because of its barbarism, because of its vulgarity, people say, well, I don't even want to talk about that. And it's the same way we have things, we don't, people bring things up in conversations like, no, that's not for polite company. That's not a good thing. The cross was exactly that way back then. It was like, it was not what you talked about in polite company. So when this new group of people comes along, and they say, we follow a crucified man. People are like, what are you talking about? We don't even talk about crucified. That's just not the kind of thing we talk about. How can you possibly imagine that someone crucified is someone worth following? Because that's someone who's been emptied of their power. That one's someone who's been shamed. That's someone who's suffered a horrible and vulgar death. There's a stigma. It's ludicrous to say you're following someone who was crucified. No matter whether you say he rose from the dead or whatever, that can't possibly be the thing. And so when he says it's foolishness and a stumbling block, people said, I don't get that. And it's not that much different today. We say, well, what sort of savior do you have? Well, he died. What do you mean he died? Well, yeah, he suffered this brutal death. There was this empire that put him to death and hung him with some criminals. That's who I follow. Okay. And that's exactly what he's going on here. And so this is what's happening is people are looking and say, well, that's not the way it is. But what Paul wants to say is he says, for the foolishness of God is wiser than human wisdom, and the weakness of God is stronger than human strength. And he's saying, in the cross, we see what's going on. We see exactly what's happening, that God is indeed wiser and more powerful. And how can this be? How can a man dying on a cross be wisdom and power? Because we understand, for those who believe, we understand that it's on the cross we're saved. That's why it's wisdom. That's why it's power. But to anyone looking from the outside, well, that's just foolishness. That's weakness, is another way to say it. And to be honest, I have trouble wrapping my head around it sometimes. To think about true strength as Jesus portrays it is to give up your rights. I grew up in the United States. One of the things I learned all about is all my rights and the need to claim my rights and stand on my rights. And one of the things that Jesus wants to flip on its head, he says, no, you give up your rights. There's a passage in one of Paul's other letters to this church in Philippi where he says, have this in mind, the mind of Jesus, who set aside all his rights and took on the form of a servant. He said, be like that, set aside your rights. Be like Jesus, one who was shamed and scorned and despised. And I stop and I think, that's the power and wisdom of God? Is to be scorned, shamed, despised. That's the power of God, to give up all my rights? That certainly doesn't sound like what I think of as power. That doesn't certainly sound like what I think of as wisdom. That doesn't sound like what I grew up watching and learning about what power looks like, whether it was John Wayne or Mel Gibson or Arnold Schwarzenegger or Jason Statham or whoever, all these different wonderful pictures, like that's what power looks like. And so sometimes what happened is I think of those stories and it's shaped and I was like, all of a sudden I want a macho Jesus. This strong Jesus who takes on everything. But what Paul says is that's not what Jesus looks like. That's not the power of God. The power of God is not Jesus strapping on the sword and taking down the Romans. But the power of God is a man dying in obscurity, in pain, and being stigmatized. This idea of this powerful Jesus, this John Wayne type of Jesus, is simply not there. And the church throughout history has tried to make Jesus look like that. But Paul makes it clear the wisdom and power of God is the cross. And so one writer puts it this way, to embrace the ethic of the cross is to follow the same pattern. We exercise dominion not primarily by capturing positions of power and influence, but by servanthood to the larger society. What she's saying is that's the ethic, that's the pattern, that's the power of God. So Paul says it, but we preach Christ crucified. A stumbling block to Jews and foolishness to Gentiles, to those God whom was called, both Jews and Greeks, the power of God and the wisdom of God. And so what's he saying? That the cross reveals who God is like. Another way to say it is, do you want to know what God is like? Look at the cross. Do you want to know what God is like? Look at Jesus in his life. That's what it's saying. He's saying this is what God is like. So in some sense, the cross reveals what God is like. And people go all different lengths, all different ways to try and figure out what God is like. And Paul's saying, here's what God is like. If you want to know what God is like, the power and the wisdom of God is like, look to the cross. So we have something that contrasts the world, something that doesn't make sense. We have something that reveals God. But the question I want to spend the rest of our time on is like, what might the foolishness of the cross or the demonstration of weakness be calling us to? When Paul says, I resolve to know nothing but him and but Christ and him crucified, what would it look like for Fruitland Covenant Church to say that? We resolve to know nothing but Christ and him crucified. In fact, in some sense, that will be a question for us over the coming months as we go through this Church of Corinth. So what does it look like to be a spirit-filled community in light of the resurrection, to live a life shaped like Jesus, to shape in the shape of the cross? What does it look like to do it? And so there's different ways we can think about it. Certainly, it's an invitation to think about what power looks like. And I mentioned that already. It's like, what does power look like and how we use that? And we'll probably come back to that. Or what Jesus-shaped power looks like in contrast to the other way. So one writer says, you know, it's power above, power from above or power from below. And that's one way we can think about that. But I want to think about something different. And I want to consider one for the church. And by the church, I mean Fruitland Covenant Church, but also the church in general, the church in the United States. And Paul uses an illustration of the wisdom and power of God at work when he writes to the Corinthians. And this is what he says. We heard it earlier. He says, brothers and sisters, now he's addressing these people in Corinth. Think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. Now listen to what he's saying here. He's saying this, he's saying, hey guys, you know, not many of you were really wise by the world's standards. Not many of you were anything special. But God chose you, in other words, God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. Hey, God chose you, the weak. So this is not exactly the message that many of you would want to hear on a Sunday morning from the pastor saying like, hey, you're all foolish, you're all weak, but God chose you. But let's think about it from a different perspective. What is he doing here? He's saying that God has chosen the people on the margins, the marginalized. In other words, God looked down and he said, I'm going to pick the people who weren't ever picked to play kickball. I'm going to pick the people who are out on the street and when people walk by, they look the other way. Or maybe they simply just don't notice them. He says, God is going to pick the people that no one ever comes to for advice. They weren't the people who were asked to speak at conferences or lead the local community club. Or maybe they were not asked to ever lead anything. They were not influential. In other words, God is saying, I'm not picking the influencers. The people in the church in Corinth probably had 2 followers on TikTok, them and their mom. And so this is what, when they started talking, no one listened to these people. They actively walked away. In short, they were nothings. As he's thinking about that. But these are the people that God chose. In other words, he's saying weakness is strength, foolishness is wisdom. The cross reverses values. And God's choosing them is one picture of that they are given status, not through self-promotion, but as a gift from God. And so Paul is taking this picture of the wisdom and the power of God, the foolishness, the stumbling block of the cross, and he's applying it to the people. He's saying, this is what it looks like down on the ground. When I talk about preaching Christ crucified, when I'm talking about following a crucified Savior, it looks like a God who chooses the people and pays attention to the people that the rest of the world ignores. Or as L.L. Wellborn says it this way, he says, in the cross of Christ, God has affirmed nothings and nobodies. Now you might be thinking, are you saying we're a bunch of nothings and nobodies? In a way, yes. No, but really not. What I'm suggesting is that the foolishness of the cross is power and weakness, is upside down values of the world, the wisdom of God versus the wisdom of the world. And so what Paul is doing is, he's suggesting a different way of how we view people. And so go back to this church in Corinth. The people he called were not seen as wise by human standards. They were the not people of not much use. They were the marginalized. But in the church, the called people of God, the wisest foolishness, the strong weakness of God, they were valued. So now let's jump forward to say In today's world, we'd say, another way to put it maybe is, God didn't follow the ways of the world when it came to looking at people. Because of the cross of Christ, all the values were flipped around, so God didn't follow the ways of the world in looking at people. And consequently, or subsequently, the church should not either. And that was one of their problems here in this church, was they were viewing people through the lens of the world. They were looking at, who are the influencers? Who are the wise? Well, I want to follow Apollos because he's got a big crowd. And like, man, he is a flashy talker, and he never stumbles over his words, and people just get wrapped around everything he says. So I'm following him. Oh, that person's got a lot of influence over there. He's got the important people coming over for dinner. I want to get close to him and know him. These were the kind of things that were part of the society and that were shown at Corinth there. And what Paul is saying is, that's not the way of Jesus. We ought to see people the same way that God does, not the way that the world does. And so now if we jump to 2026, we might ask ourselves, are there people who are more marginalized or seen as of less value in our culture? Who are those people that we maybe see as of less value? Oftentimes it's people with disabilities, right? Physical disabilities, mental disabilities. We look and say, oh, they're not really. In fact, there's movements in so many places to do testing before children are born. And if they are suspected or presumed to have some sort of defect, maybe Down syndrome or something, like, no, we don't want them. Why? Because they're less than. And so there's this move within our culture, within our society, to say this segment of the population has less value. And so what we need to ask ourselves is, do we have that same culture going on in our church? And we say, no, they have the same value. They are of value because Christ crucified is flipping the wisdom of the values. Or we can put it a different way. What is another one? People who get older. And I realize we're all getting older, right? But look at the way the culture we live in today treats those who get older. And oftentimes it's to say, well, you know, you've reached a certain age and you're just not useful anymore. People end up, because of physical decline or mental decline, sometimes in nursing homes, it's like, oh, they're just not the person they used to be. They are still the same person they used to be. But we see oftentimes people, because they're not able to do the same things, they're not able to think the same things, that somehow now they are less than. And it happens in the church too often, too. We look and we say, oh, when a church is looking around, I don't know many churches that look around and say, oh, we want to reach the older folks. No, instead, what does almost every church you meet talk about? Well, we want to reach the young people. Why? Because they're the people. We want the young people because they can become involved in church. We want the young people because they're ones who can fill our committee. We need work done around the church, so we want some young people. And the cross of Christ says, you're looking at it the wrong way. You're setting up a marginalization. You're setting up what Reinreiter used the extreme term of, say, an apartheid in the church, where there's those who are valued and those who aren't. And what the cross of Christ is inviting us to do is to say, we want to reflect the values of Jesus, in which every single person has value. We don't want to reflect, that's the wisdom of God, to say that each and every person has value. And Paul's going to come back to this later when he talks about spiritual gifts and all sorts of things. But here he's getting at that point where he's talking about this church in Corinth. He's saying God uses all different kinds of people, and it's not about their value in terms of the society. But instead, God flips values around and looks at things in a different way. And so what he's inviting us, I think, to ask is, are our churches a reflection of the way the culture views people? Of who's valuable and who's not? Or are we a cross-shaped community that reflects the radical love of God? And so the invitation is to look at things in a different way. And so when Paul says, I resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus and him crucified, he's saying the world has one set of wisdom and value, but the cross of Christ reveals something totally different. Because in the cross of Christ, who does Jesus identify with? He identifies with the marginalized. He identifies with the stigmatized. He dies as a criminal. He dies as a rebel. He dies as one of the outcasts. If you were a wealthy person, if you were a citizen of Rome, you did not suffer crucifixion. That was reserved for the lowest of the low. And so when Jesus does this, he identifies, he said, this is the kind of culture, this is the kind of values, this is the kind of ethos that God has, and by extension, an invitation to the church to say, this is the kind of values, the kind of ethos, the kind of values that we should have in the way that we look at people. To not use the wisdom of the world in how we evaluate people, but instead the wisdom of God. So God's wisdom is not the wisdom of the world. His power is not the power of the world. But Jesus and Jesus crucified is his wisdom and his power. And we're called to know that power and live by that power and proclaim it to others. And so the invitation for us is to hear that good news. Hear the good news that Jesus Christ is crucified, that Jesus died for us, that he was raised and he offers us new life. But it's also an invitation to say those values of the life of Jesus, the values of giving up his own rights, the value of laying down his life for others, the value of saying these who matter are reflected in Jesus. And they're what's Paul calling out in the church in Corinth, and he's inviting us to say, who are the people that matter to us? Are we viewing people simply through a lens of utilitarianism? Saying who's valuable, who's not? Or are we viewing them through the lens of the cross in which says all are valuable and all matter? And we stumble and fall down in this a lot. And I'm saying we, I'm meaning myself. I mean, it's so easy to look around and to say, oh, well, that's the person. They've got influence. They've got power. And Jesus invites us to a different way of seeing things. The cross and the crucifixion, the cross-shaped life, this cruciform life, this life that looks like Jesus, invites us to see power and influence in a whole different way, to see it as upside down and to see people in a different way. So my prayer is that as a church, we can be that kind of community, the one that knows nothing but Christ and him crucified, not only in the sense of saying that's the only path to salvation, but also in the sense of saying, do we see people in the way that God sees them? Do we see the foolishness of God to use the weak and the powerless? Do we see the foolishness of God in the people, in the things that he's chosen? And do we live in that same way? To recognize the value, the worth of each and every person. So my prayer is we become a cross-shaped community. One that knows nothing but him, nothing but Christ and him crucified. One that demonstrates not the power of the world, but the foolishness and the power of the cross. Amen.